Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights need to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Groeneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. On this episode of The Future of Teamwork, Dane sits down with Buddy Teester, CEO of Souls for Souls and author of From Tailspin to Tailwind. For more than a decade, Buddy has been leading a turnaround that not only rebuilt an organization, but also redefined how business models can create opportunity in communities around the world. From his unconventional career path through theater, YPO, and entrepreneurship, to his leadership at the intersection of nonprofit and for-profit thinking, Buddy shares how curiosity, clear systems, and genuine partnership have shaped his approach. Their conversation explores what it takes to build trust, sustain momentum, and empower teams, whether across continents or on a Monday morning all-hands call. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name's Dane Groeneveld, and today I'm joined by Buddy Teester, the CEO of Souls for Souls. We've been having a great conversation pre-show about the work that he's doing, which brings great impact to communities. I'm just excited to dive into this conversation today. So welcome, Buddy.
Dane, thanks for having me. I like the fact that we're talking about teamwork and maybe a bunch of other things too. If our 5 minutes before we got started is any indication.
You bet. Yeah, there's something about teamwork that makes me think that it's a unit of measure, but it actually has huge implications, you know, upstream and downstream in our communities and in our personal relationships. So that's what fascinates me.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about you and how you've been coming to do all this cool work.
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for the chance to have this conversation. I'm really looking forward to it. I have been the CEO at Souls for Souls since October of 2012, and it's the best thing I've ever done in my life. So I start with that because it'll be 13 years in October, and I still feel like that every day. So I know not everybody gets to say that or feel that way, but I feel lucky that I do. And prior to that, my background has been a mix of for-profit and not-for-profit, which maybe if we get a chance to talk about how Souls for Souls works. Those two things intersect every day here, and I love having both those things in my background. So I was the first one in my family on either side to go to college, and I think maybe like a lot of folks, I thought I would go to college and come out with a good job. Like that was kind of the way it was supposed to go, and I got introduced to religious studies and French and instead of economics, which terribly disappointed my father early on, and yet... That led to working in theater, which was another twist the wrong direction. And that led me to get an MBA and an MA in arts administration. So I moved from Virginia to Texas at SMU. And I went through that program, which I loved, and then got out and thought, I never want to work in theater. Like it totally changed how I felt about that. And I went to work at this organization, not-for-profit membership organization called the Young Presidents Organization. And in a way, that was my real education because it opened me up to this incredible network of people and thinkers and places that had a huge impact on me. And so between that and then like, okay, I want to go do my own thing. So YPO, that was three times I was there.
Wow.
With stints in between of starting businesses. And then in 2009, I got fired from a gig that I really liked. You and I talking about the title, the chief network officer, which was a lot of fun. I got fired, new CEO came in, and instant mutual loathing, and he gets to make the decisions, not me. And so I was gone. And I went into business with a YPOer. We sold ads on grocery carts. We did some other things, but that was the core part of the business. And it was one he knew well. And it was a turnaround. It was coming out of the real estate crisis in the U.S., the housing crisis, and a lot of the customers depended on that market. And so I didn't know it at the time, but I really loved that, figuring out how to get the business back on track. What could I do internally with the team? And after a couple of years, we got it turned around, and I was living in Dallas, the business in California, and he said, hey, it's time to move to California. My wife said, you'll go by yourself if that's what you want. And I did not want to go by myself. And so that was 2012. I'm 48 years old. I'm thinking, okay, how many times can I keep going back and forth between these two? And after a lot of thought and conversation, especially with my wife, I felt like not-for-profit was the way that I wanted to go.
Yeah.
And it turned out that Souls for Souls was looking for a new CEO. I didn't know the organization. I didn't know anything about what they did or how they were formed, but I instantly loved the model, this idea of, in this case, using footwear to help create opportunity for people using business and sort of markets and capitalism as an approach to poverty deeply appealed to me, Dane. And yeah. So it also ended up being a huge turnaround. We could maybe put that aside, but it was, I just came out with a book in May called From Tailspin to Tailwind. And the tailspin part is like, that's why they were looking for a CEO, right? It was a mess on every level. And, you know, over the last almost 13 years now, we've got the business fixed. We've gotten a reputation fixed. We have an amazing board. We're doing work that I think matters to a lot of people. And I can't think of anything else I'd rather be doing.
That's awesome. There's so many cool themes that are just popping there for me, buddy. Number one, the boomerang three times at YPO is really interesting. They were clearly doing something right to keep attracting you back.
You know, it was interesting. So I was there for a year. I had a chance to go help a friend run a business in San Francisco. And that sounded like a lot of fun. It wasn't as much fun as it sounded, as it turned out. So then I came back to my boss's old job. So it was actually this kind of cool thing.
Yeah.
And I was there for a few years. And I left as the title was executive director, but as the CEO. And when I left, I thought, well, I would never go back. And so I went through all of this internal, like, oh, going back, it's a step down. Nobody cares. Nobody remembers. Like I was gone for 4 years.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. And that was a big lesson for me. It's like,
interesting.
All this stuff in my head bore almost no relationship to what actually I was doing and who I was doing it with. And after the first, you know, couple of months when I realized this is only you who thinks this, then I really got into it and had a blast. But YPO is an amazing network. So, you know, it's still friends that I worked with and members that I worked with are still part of my network, you know, all 30 years later now.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've never been part of YPO. I've been part of Vistage, which has some similarities.
Sure.
But I've got a lot of friends that are part of YPO and they've created huge bonds and connections and ways of doing business together and supporting each other through tough times, inspiring each other. So I see a lot of good coming from the network.
Yeah, for sure.
That's super cool. And it's interesting what you share about having left as the executive director and coming back. I was talking to Maggie Jackson yesterday. She's working with us on a new Healthy Team Summit that we're putting together later in the year. And she wrote the book Uncertain. And she said, the fascinating thing about humans is that we assume that nothing's changed since we last saw each other. So if I'm walking down the street and I see Buddy and you and I haven't seen each other in 15 years since we were at high school, my belief about who you are is very much, you know, who you were 15 years ago. But my belief about who I am is very different because I've lived my own experience. So there's something here which I think curiosity can bring forward, which is like often we get hung up in our own like immediate perceptions and we don't re-engage and get curious to kind of learn what's new.
Yeah. You know, your analogy is more elegant than mine, but we are all extras in somebody else's movie.
Yeah.
Right? When I remember that, I'm just a guy walking in the background for somebody else's story. And yet for me, it's my point of view, it's my character.
Yeah.
That occasionally is really helpful to sort of get grounded back to of whatever you think is happening for you, buddy. It's almost for sure not happening for anybody else that way. And I read the Daily Stoic. It's an important part of my routine.
Yeah.
And between those two things, look, I fail 90% of the time. But the 10% that I'm able to keep it in perspective, those are the kind of things like there's this other thing happening where you're a bit player and all you can control is your response to that.
Yes.
And those two things are pretty good guardrails for me.
Super good guardrails. And that Daily Stoic, I mean, I love what Ryan Holiday's doing over there with that whole platform. My wife and I got into the journal, and it's probably Oh, it's so good. Yeah.
We're on I haven't done that.
We're on our second loop of the same journal.
Wow.
And it's interesting because we'll start our days off and saying, hey, how did that prompt land with you and how did you respond to it today?
Really?
Very cool.
Oh, okay. That may have to get written down as a takeaway from today.
Yeah, definitely. I recommend it. I think teams can benefit from it too, because there's one scary part about Stoicism as I learned about it, which is that it started coming out as Rome was starting to crumble. It became, you know, so hopefully we're not in a Rome's crumbling moment. But the thing that I find really helpful about it is that it actually encourages a lot of confidence and control in sort of who you are, like you said, what can I control, but also appreciation for where other people are at and what else is going on in the world. It's not, you're not like isolating yourself into a hermit's lifestyle, but you're building strength and confidence in how you're going to respond to everything else out there.
You know, then you make an interesting point. So about the, you know, Rome is falling, Marcus Aurelius is kind of the last guy, but to me, it's directly applicable to this moment because it does feel like a lot of things are changing, right? Mm-hmm. Not just politically, but you and I were talking a little bit about AI, all these other things that maybe it's crumbling, maybe it's getting better. I don't know. But in that moment where all you can control is what you can control, mm-hmm. it becomes, I think, particularly valuable lesson. And I don't know. I think there's probably something important to understand how those two things link right now.
Yeah.
I hope it's not falling apart either, but when all this is happening and it's so easy just to kind of spin up and worrying about that, or that's a terrible decision, or she's a terrible person, so outside of your control, but man, it can drive me just into a spiral.
Yeah.
If I can pull back up for a second and think, okay, I got two or three things of levers that I can pull. That's super helpful.
Yeah. It is super helpful. And actually in teams, and I want to dive into Souls for Soul in a minute, but I'm going to come back to your chief network officer at YPO, because pre-show you were talking about how, you know, the internet was just coming about and you were finding ways to reconnect people around interests. I think in teams, having that more stoic mindset and coming back to think about, well, what is that individual's story? What's happening in their movie that I'm an extra in, going back to your analogy? That curiosity is really interesting. And I think it allows us to connect on some different levels outside of the immediate task that we need to be doing. So, you know, maybe that's a good way to bounce back into what you've seen there and what you were doing at that time with YPO, you know, building the network around interests.
Yeah. You've used the word a couple of times now, curiosity. So clearly that's part of what drives you.
Yeah.
And it's such a great thing to think about. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit on the teams thing. So Souls for Souls, based pretty much here in Nashville. We have a big warehouse in Alabama where a lot of our team is. But that it was very much a physical, we're together kind of thing. And like a lot of organizations in 2020, we decided we weren't going to work that way anymore. Our COO, he was the second employee at Souls for Souls, so he was there long before I was. He died from cancer. Mm-hmm. He got sick in January and died in May. And during that time, you know, the pandemic started. So we were kind of at sea in all kinds of ways. David was a huge personality. He was our chief operating officer, and he was an anchor. And so we didn't have him, but we couldn't say goodbye to him because of the pandemic. And then our clients were all freaking out. We mostly work with footwear and retail, footwear and apparel companies and a lot of retailers. And so that business was falling apart. What did it mean for us? What did it mean for people that we served? And at the end of that year, we decided to go 100% virtual. We said, we called it work from anywhere. And within 2 years, Dane, the number of people who worked for Souls in Nashville was probably cut in half.
Mm.
Like, we hired some people and people moved. And so that curiosity, I think, so we're still there 5 years later, you know, 5 years at the end of this year. I think it is still core to how we work.
Mm.
And I think one of the things that has, so we have a meeting every Monday, all hands, and we spend the first 10 minutes of the meeting, we go into breakout groups of 5 or 6, and we always answer 2 questions. One question is the same each time, and that is, what's the most important thing that happened for you last week or that you anticipate coming up? And then there's a random question. How do you eat corn on the cob? Huh. Long ways or round? What are you reading right now? So it's always a different question, but about connecting with the rest of a small group of the team. And, you know, every once in a while we say, look, we're doing this Monday morning meeting. We've been doing it for 10 years. Should we change it? And everybody's like, you can do whatever you want, but you cannot take away that 10 minutes.
Wow. That's powerful.
So, you know, part of that's curiosity. Like, is this really going to be an interesting question about how you eat corn? Turns out, yes, it is. But all these little things are kind of how we keep that together, because otherwise most of us don't see each other except for once a year.
Yeah.
And so that, I hadn't thought about it in terms of curiosity, but that's maybe a better frame. It's not just a random question. It is a way to be curious about what other people see and feel and believe, that we make sure we practice that instead of just hope that it happens on its own.
Oh, I love that. That's a great exercise. I want to try some of that in my team now. The thing that sparks for me on that approach, buddy, and I can see why they don't want you to take it away from them, is that when you think about interest groups and people coming together on a more structured basis, it can become narrow. But the fact that you're asking what's the most important thing, and then what's this answer to the random question, there's always dynamism there. So
absolutely,
the group's not going to get bored of talking about what the score was in the football at the weekend, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, like, we didn't always do it this way. So there was some of that staleness that was creeping in. And
yeah.
Jamie, who's our VP of communications, she's the one that takes the lead on this most weeks. And God knows where she finds it, but she makes sure that it is not stale.
That's brilliant.
When it comes into that meeting, for sure.
That's super cool. So, you know, creating that human connection has been important in that setting. And you mentioned some other turnarounds, you know, the Souls for Souls and earlier. And you've talked about this book. So it sounds like From Tailspin to Tailwind, you said you just finished in May. Mm-hmm.
In May, right.
Very cool. What? Tell me more about the book. Like, how did you shape that? What is the story that the reader should be excited to encounter?
Yeah, well, thanks for being optimistic. The reader will be excited. I had a friend, it was actually someone I knew from YPO. We worked together. She was the head of education for a big not-for-profit association, and they were having their annual meeting here in Nashville. And she asked if I would like to speak. And of course, I leapt at that chance. And then she said, great, but I don't want you to give your usual stick. Like, I don't want you to just talk about Souls for Souls. I'm like, well, damn, that's that's what I have to talk about. And I cannot tell you how much that push changed the trajectory of that, because that was my 10th year at Souls for Souls. And I thought, well, what have I learned in 10 years that's worth passing along? Is there anything? Like, do I have any pitch besides what we do at Souls for Souls? And so I started thinking about the things that we had done to get out of the turnaround phase and to grow and to thrive. And I came up with, look, there are a handful of lessons. And so I turned that into a talk that I worked really hard on. Jamie, whom I mentioned, she was a huge help. But I really, like, I leaned into it pretty seriously. And when I got done, and I don't say this very often, but, like, I was proud of that effort. I thought that the content and the story were pretty good. So it stayed there for a little bit, kind of like, is there more, is there more? And I didn't really ever do anything. And then about a year ago, I asked Jamie and said, do you think there's a book here? I'd written a book earlier in 2017 that was much more about Souls for Souls. Mm. And I went to the publisher, he's in South Carolina, but he happened to be in Nashville. And I said, look, Adam, and I know him from YPO, this is a perfect time to say it. This is a bullshit idea. Like, I know this is your business to say yes, but I don't, save me from embarrassing myself if this is a bad idea. And so he listened and he said, actually, I do think it's a good idea. Needs work, but I think there's a good idea here. So working with his team, working a lot internally, we created this book that looks at the things that we did. So starting with our vision and mission, about our values, than about putting an operating system in place. One of the ways Salesforce got into such trouble was no controls, no infrastructure really. Mm-hmm. Investing in our team and our board, because our board had been both one of the reasons that things went off the rails, but also how it got back on.
Yeah.
For us, it's about how to be a good partner. That's a key role that we play in all kinds of directions. And then setting a big goal. I sort of hate that phrase, BHAG, but we set one of those in 2017 to have $1 billion in economic impact by 2030. And that, I think, a lot by luck turned into a great decision for how we think about what we do every day. We don't think about it once a year when it's time to say, how are we doing? We use it every day. So it's the story of how all those things came together.
Brilliant.
And helped us get through, you know, some up and then down again and then up again. But, you know, if you look over that almost 13 years, the arc of that's going the right way.
Oh, I love it. The elements there are very cool. I know a lot of people will have read, you know, different books, whether it's Good to Great or whatever it might be, and have a sense of it. But it's context matters. So I think the way that you've built it within the Souls for Souls journey makes it very interesting, and it creates new learning. Like, I'm intrigued as you went about the operating system, for example, like what did that entail at Souls for Souls? How did you create clarity around how the team was going to do their work together?
Yeah. So I'll answer that. And I will say also back to the virtual part of how Souls for Souls works now, because we had that in place, Dane, when we weren't physically together, it turns out that we had already a process, a methodology for how to stay in touch with each other that didn't require being in person. And it was that operating system.
Yeah.
So there's a guy who wrote a book in the 90s, probably called Rockefeller Habits. His name is Vern Harnish.
Okay.
Yeah. And he sort of told the story of John Rockefeller, who is complicated, but you know, the business that he built was pretty, well, nothing else had existed like it. So how did he work with his team? And so Vern expanded in that. And then I knew him from YPO and YEO. And so when I got to Souls for Souls, I'm like, there's nothing here. Like, they're using QuickBooks. The budget is one page. It's wrong. So there were all these things like, I know one place that we can get started. So I got the book out and kind of went through the one-page strategic plan, which is a core tenet of what the book lays out. And so at first, I just did it by myself. Then I brought in David, who was our COO, I mentioned. Then I brought in the rest of the executive. So it just sort of added, and we had a coach. There's an organization here in Nashville called Petra who coaches this methodology. There's software that goes with it. So we just sort of kind of built on it a little bit at a time to the point now where it's how we run the organization.
Beautiful.
You know, we've got this 2030 goal. We have 3-year. We have 1 year. It breaks down into quarters. Everybody has priorities for the quarter that are on the dashboard. I can see, everybody can see how Buddy's doing on his priorities. And I can see how everybody else is doing on theirs. We have this quarter, we have two company priorities. So there are two things that as an organization, we say, we have to nail.
Yep.
And so there's not like, what am I working on? What's important? We said, well, for this, here's the year. Here are the six things that we want to do this year. This quarter, these are the two. And so it helps when you're not in front of people all the time and you're not bumping into each other, or to have this one place where you can go and say, this is what we said.
Yeah.
And if you're not clear about that, that's fine. We can have that conversation. But this is it. And that has turned out to be an incredibly valuable asset that we didn't really understand how valuable until it got tested in the way that it did.
Yeah. I can only imagine one of my words for 2025 has been mattering, and mattering insofar as like, how does the work I'm doing help others? Why is it significant to others? So I can imagine that builds a lot of mattering in your team, just being aware of what those two quarterly priorities are or what the six for the year are.
Yeah. And look, I'm sure you talking about teamwork and digging into it like you have, Dane, one of the biggest sources of friction is what's important.
Yeah.
And if there's a way that you can have a conversation, it's not my opinion against yours. It's like, this is what we said as an organization we're going to do. That's one thing. And the other thing is the ability, like you can say no now without it being of being a jackass.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. I want to do what you're asking me, Dane, but this is what I said I had to do for the quarter.
Yeah.
So we can talk about next quarter. We can talk about something else, but you see this? So it takes a temperature down.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
In those conversations, yeah.
I like that, take the temperature down. Because a lot of people, I think the stats are 87% of people don't like to give a no or negative feedback, right? That's a lot of people on your
that's
team.
That's a lot of people.
So if you can take the temperature down, give them language and framework to safely say, hey, buddy, I love that you're bringing that energy and you want to do that, but it doesn't fit with what we've committed to. There's a shared like accountability and alignment there. It's a much more healthy conversation.
You know, the other thing too that I've found, I know it helps me and I get the sense that it other people too. You're a founder, you're the lead, you're the top of the pyramid, whatever your thing is. You have the positional authority to just, well, I thought about it today. I'm going to go talk to somebody and it's going to be their job to do that.
Yeah.
That creates a lot of chaos. Right? Can't. I'm not saying for you personally, yeah. I don't know that, but it can. And I know there are times when that I will have that feeling and I'll be like, wait a minute, we have a process. And it doesn't say these are the two and then whatever shit buddy dreams up.
Yeah.
Or somebody else, right? Yeah. I mean, so it also creates this kind of, what I hope it creates is a sense of equality that even if on the org chart, I should just sort of take it, say, do whatever he says, that still exists. I'm not that naive.
Yeah.
But it helps me sometimes not say that thing out loud.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe that.
And that's probably more powerful than creating a culture where somebody can push back because that's hard to do.
Yeah.
But if I keep my mouth shut, they don't have to.
I like that a lot. And I have been the chief distraction officer for many, many years. So I could probably benefit from a system like that. I've tried to create the psychological safety that everyone can say, hey, Dane, jump back in your box. That's not the right answer for today. But having a system and a process, I think, helps everyone else know how to play that game too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's very cool. One of my good friends, Dr. Andre Martin, he wrote this book behind me, Wrong Fit, Right Fit. And he talks about the role of leaders to be to import stress and to export civility. And it's such a cool concept, but it's not easy to execute. But the way you described your system, it gives me hope that actually that can be an objective and an outcome that's delivered by leadership.
That's a great phrase.
Yeah, particularly in this current age of like overwhelm and always on that we're kind of navigating. Mm.
Yeah. And I will say also that the process of set for us setting those objectives or priorities, that is, we're not uncivil to each other, but like, that's where you can sort of go to the mat.
Yes.
Arguing for why this should be and why that shouldn't be. There's a place for that. So we don't always have to be like, we're all fine.
Yeah.
There's a place to say, no, I think I'm right and you're wrong, or that's more important. But when that's over, you don't have to keep arguing for your thing. You know that in 3 months, you get another whack at that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, I think, helps.
Yeah, it does. It because some strategies can be very monolithic, particularly in larger companies where they set out a three-year strategy and like there's this deep roadmap and we're stuck. So I like the quarterly kind of revival. Yeah. It's very cool. You also talked about good partnering. So I guess this is where I'd like to dive a little bit more deeply into the model there at Souls for Souls. And you talked about the $1 billion of economic impact. So how do you work with partners and how does that flow down to the economic impact? You mentioned retailers and the like. So could you just walk us through a project or a program in that setting?
It's I wrote about this in the book because someone said it to me, not while we were writing it at this stage. Sometimes we use that word too much at Souls for Souls. We're like, is the electric company a partner? Like, where do we draw the line?
Yeah.
And I thought about that. It's like, oh, that's an interesting critique. And I would rather over-index on being a partner than saying only these people are partners. Like, if we think about that, that's probably a good way to go through the day. Yeah. So having said that, Souls for Souls collects new and used shoes and clothes. So that's kind of the fuel for, we also raise money, but that's the fuel for a lot of our work. And those people who donate are partners. So that could be Nike, Adidas, Reebok, Deckers, Hoka,
yeah,
Caleres, all these brands that donate their excess inventory in seconds and returns. So that's one piece. But we also collect shoes from the public. So you, Dane, you could go to your local DSW store, put your shoes in a box, and DSW customers every month are donating 120,000 pairs of shoes,
wow,
that come to Souls for Souls, right?
Yeah.
So they're clearly a partner, but so are you. Like, we have to think about you as a partner. What do you need? Why are you doing that? How can we get you to do it more often? How can we get you to tell your friends? And how can we make you feel like you're making a difference? Mm. How are you mattering, right? To use,
yeah,
your,
yeah.
I love that word. So that's one piece, is kind of partnering on the inbound side when it comes into us. But I would say the biggest change in my time at Souls for Souls is thinking about the people we're working with on the ground who get the product out to people.
Yeah.
Because rarely does Souls for Souls show up and say, here we are with shoes and clothes. We work through partner organizations on the ground who know the communities and the people. And, you know, sometimes they're the ones who have to say, Dane should get this stuff. Buddy, I don't know that we can trust him that way.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah,
we, first of all, we wouldn't know how to do that. And second, we could, that could create all kinds of other problems if we were trying to do it.
Yeah.
So really thinking about them as partners has been a big change, because it's easy sometimes to say, well, I've got the stuff that you want, so you need to do what I say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the broader piece. There are we're in 8 or 9 countries now, Dane, where we have this program called For Opportunity, where all the used shoes and clothes that we collect and some of the new, we resell to a local partner,
mm-hmm,
and then that organization resells them in their communities,
right,
as a way to create economic opportunity, right? So
very cool.
There's lots of times people are like, well, why don't you just give it to them? Because that's not sustainable. Environmentally, it's not sustainable, but from a business model, it's not sustainable. If there is kind of a market mechanism, we can keep doing this.
Yeah.
Right? And so when we, again, for, I think when we got started with this model, we were like, we have the stuff, here's what the price is.
Yep.
And these are the things that we want you to do. It was a lot top down. And over time, thank God we changed that, of like, okay, we really are partners, to, we had a, for the first time in February of this year, we got all of those groups together. There were, like I said, 7 or 8 of them in one room to talk to each other for the first time. So that was Ukraine, Philippines, Honduras, Dominican Republic, Haiti, Chile, Belize, like different cultures, different languages, all in the same spot. And we said, well, you're all our, we call them direct partners. They're all our direct partners. And for a lot of us in the room, it was like a switch that got flipped to go from we're partners to we should be thinking about what do you want to do? You're mm-hmm. doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
You are in these communities helping people create jobs, provide for their families. If you say that you want to go from 3 stores to 20 stores, we should be thinking about that, not how many containers of shoes are we going to send you?
Yeah.
And so I... probably not being very articulate about that, but it was a big change for us to say, we should understand a lot more about what you want to do in your communities,
yeah,
and how can we help you do that? And I think that's going to be a huge change driver for us, because instead of just saying we need to collect 1 million more pairs of shoes, maybe that's the right number,
yeah,
but we are doing it so that Raul in Honduras can do this, that Sam in Haiti can do this. And that's a very different end of the telescope to have.
It's brilliant. I'm super captivated by this, buddy, because I've been exploring a number of entrepreneurial models in, you know, developing or marginalized communities. We actually had a member of the show on, Max Guinness, that talked about universal basic income. We had Dr. Ernesto Ciroli that talked about his enterprise facilitation model. And one of the common themes and threads there was that if you put the agency in the hands of the owners, the entrepreneurs in the community, they make so much more happen. And so it's not just, hey, here's a whole bunch of cool stuff for your people, but we're actually going to help you run your businesses, and your businesses are going to support other businesses, and people can start to gravitate towards what drives energy and passion for them. So that just, it just feels like it's, I can see where the $1 billion of economic impact comes from, from the way you explained it.
You know, agency gets thrown around a lot, but I think it's important. There's no but there. One of the things that happened for me pretty early at Souls for Souls, and I'm grateful for it, we really started this program in Haiti. And I met two women who would go on to become sort of super entrepreneurs in how they worked. And one of the things that clicked for me was if we treated them as partners, as equals, or even if we just said, and you know, I don't have to be careful how I use just here, just customers.
Yeah.
That gave them so much more power, because if they were recipients, they have to take what we give them.
Yes.
It's all one way.
Yeah.
But when they're customers, they get to come to the table in this totally different way. They have agency. They can say, your price is too high, your product's terrible, whatever. They could come and represent themselves instead of, oh, thank you for sending me these shitty shoes again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that was a huge turnaround for me, is that it's the business model makes more sense for everybody, but it does this thing about the psychology that was totally unexpected.
Yeah.
And you know, now we can talk about it and recognize it, which is great. But I think in a lot of the not-for-profit world, there is this, like, I'm here to help.
Yeah.
Which is such a good instinct, but man, it can go wrong if you don't think about how it feels to be on the other side of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And if the individuals are not engaged, going back to mattering, if your partners on the ground don't feel like they're beliefs and approach and vision matters, then it lands flat. It totally lands flat. So I'm intrigued to know, like, let's say that example of a partner that wants to go from 3 stores to 20 stores. Like, imagine the different things that they can do with the 20 stores. Maybe they can start early learning and reading programs from the stores because it's a place to bring the kids. You know, that it just has this huge ripple effect.
Absolutely. And you're pretty savvy about this, clearly. But that's the... when we are partnering with them, we have this lane. It's important because we're helping generate revenue for their organization. That doesn't go, and it goes in their pockets a little bit because they pay themselves to do the work. But what they really do is all these other things.
Yeah.
Reading. So it's tends to be education, food, and programming. So I mentioned that we've just had our board meeting in Honduras. Our partner there, Raul, is doing all these incredible things. But one of them is he has a jiu-jitsu gym. Mm-hmm. That brings in, especially it's male and female, but started with, how do I get these boys who are definitely being targeted by gangs?
Yeah.
He lives in El Progreso, which is near San Pedro Sula, which 6 or 7 years ago was the murder capital of the world, all gang related. He's like, so he brought them in. And that is the kind of thing where it sounds fine. But last year, one of the first kids he brought in graduated from law school in Honduras.
Wow.
So you think, how could anybody working from Nashville, Tennessee have envisioned that?
Yeah.
But by giving Raul the resources to do what he knows his community needs, that's pretty amazing. It's harder to talk about in some ways because now we're even kind of one further step removed.
Yeah.
But without us, Raul can't do that. And with him, we can do all this stuff together. And that has been just an amazing relationship to develop over the last few years.
That's awesome. Yeah, I also, like you, I'm starting to get away from empowerment because I think it's been overused. But I think, you know, energizing people to have that belief, you know, have that belief, have that confidence to go and solve problems that they see in their community, that's pretty cool. And I think of it like, you know, just electrifying a distribution grid of, you know, sending electricity to houses. It's real. That's super cool. And the way you describe it there, buddy, as well, it makes me think about something that's been also capturing my attention for a while, which is in the future, if we continue to play this ecosystem model out more, then people aren't just partners or customers. You're teaming across organizations to achieve wider impact than just the vision and the mission alone of one organization. Now, that's going to be hard to harness and direct, but maybe it doesn't need to be harnessed or directed.
I think that's the key thing, is to say, if I trust this partner, if, you know, Raul, I'll keep using him because we were just there, he knows what we're about. We know what we're here about. We have enough of a commercial relationship that we, you know, that provides some guardrails.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't control that much, if anything, of what he's doing. Like, right. If he starts doing something, let's say he started a church.
Yep.
That might not be what we want to do, right? That's not the business that we're in. So that might get to be a little messy. But if he's finding ways to create opportunities, that's what Souls for Souls is about, is creating opportunities. If he's doing that, I have a specific example. So in 2020, when everything is terrible, Raul calls me and says, I want to start retail stores. He wasn't doing that yet. I'm like, Raul, dude, the world is ending. Number one.
Yeah.
Number two, you don't know anything about retail. Nothing. And you're going to start it now? He's like, yeah, I got a plan. So fortunately, he ignored me. And again, that was one of those things you're like, why didn't I just figure out how to support him instead of say no?
Yeah.
Right? Dude, what do I know? I don't know anything about retail either. And it was just like, that's not the way we had done it. And to go there now and see he's got three stores and what that has meant for people he has hired to work in retail, work in the warehouse. He's created 25 or 30 jobs out of that.
Awesome.
And again, another one of those things where just realizing that my model for the world about we do it this way and we have to control it, that's pretty limiting, right? There are so many more ways to get things done. And by staying enough out of his way, we have this whole new thing happening there for him and the communities that he's in. And it's been amazing.
I can only imagine. And it sounds like that gathering you had earlier in the year, you then allowed the Raouls of the world to share with their counterparts in other countries.
Yeah. So we have a new-ish partner in the Philippines. The hardest thing in this business that we're in with these guys is getting product into the country.
Yeah.
Most of these countries, you know, there's corruption in lots of places. There's corruption in the U.S., but it's pretty blatant at most of the borders.
Yeah.
And so when you get it at the port, that's when they got you.
Yeah.
They have your stuff. And so he was going through a lot, and it wasn't working. And then Raul stood up. He's been our partner now for 10 years doing this. And he told the story of how he lost the first two containers of shoes, lost all the money.
Yeah.
So here's Joel in the Philippines thinking, I'm failing. I'm maybe going to throw in the towel. And he sees this guy who we're all like in awe of saying, I totally screwed up the first two. And Joel's like, oh, well, I can get back in the game.
Yeah.
If any of us had said that, he'd be like, yeah. But he heard it from a peer. Amazing to see how that has resonated. Like, so Joel's energized again now and ready to get after it. And he's learned. He didn't just get inspired. He took away some useful information and he'll figure it out.
Which is cool. Yeah. Outside influence is a big factor. You mentioned the word peer. I think peer groups outside of your organization, whether it's Vistage, whether it's, you know, industry association you're a part of. I still don't think we invest enough time into those relationships for inspiration, for moral and emotional support, you know, whatever it might be, relationships, connections. It's very
absolutely
cool.
Absolutely.
There's one final question I wanted to ask, Buddy. Going back to the book, you said how you invest in the team and the board. Specifically, the board interests me because boards can become difficult at the best of times, but particularly in a not-for-profit world, you've got a lot of people that mean well. But then they're not always aligned in how they operate and drive the governance. So how do you approach investing in a board in a way that drives good teamwork?
It's a great question. And I think most of the work around not-for-profit governance and boards is super boring. And they just make you want to not read it.
Yeah.
That's been my experience. So when I came to Souls for Souls, as I mentioned, the Souls for Souls was losing lots of money, the reputation, it was terrible. And one of the reasons was the board only said to the CEO, you're brilliant. They didn't exercise their governance role and they were getting terrible information. So it wasn't all their fault.
Yeah.
So it went off the rails. And So when I came in, I said to the handful of board members left, like, we have to rebuild the board. It is a key step in regaining the confidence of the rest of the world in what we do. And so we were down at one point to three board members who were exhausted and didn't want to do it. To now we have 20, 21 board members.
Wow.
It's one of the best parts of what I get to do, Dane. So it's, look, you'll talk, talk to lots of people in the not-for-profit world, and their boards are a big pain in their ass.
Yep.
They're like, it's overhead. It's all the stuff you hate about it. I cannot tell you the value that our board brings every day. They do an amazing job of, I just heard this phrase from one of our board members, nose in, fingers out.
Ah, cool.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? It's a great way to think about it. It's a very visual way to say, I need to be sniffing around, asking questions. I don't touch the dials and pull the levers.
Yeah.
And our board does an incredible job of that. And on our side, as the management, we do a great job of saying, here are the plans. Here's the budget that goes with them. Here are the metrics. So we have four values. The first one is around Bell's team, transparency, being entrepreneurial, accountable, and the work is meaningful. Nice. But transparency is the start.
Yeah.
So when our board sees every month, here are the financials, here's how we're doing on our economic impact goals, here's how we're doing on our shoe collection goals, they don't have to wonder, what don't I know? And so that allows them to then sort of move up a level and say, what about these partnerships? Who else can I help connect to? And because they get to experience the work hands-on, you don't come to a meeting once a week and eat a sandwich and vote yes on the budget. You just spent 2 days in Honduras handing out shoes, talking to these kids, talking to our partners, the teachers. So when you go back and ask your company for money or product, or ask your friends to contribute to your race for every kid thing, you know what that means.
Yeah.
And so I think you put all that together. They have trust in us because we are getting good results and we're sharing the information. They came into this board knowing we have really clear expectations about fundraising and participation. So there's no, like, if somebody misses a couple of meetings, we ask them to leave.
Yeah. Accountability.
And there are term limits. So there isn't like, I've been on this board for 20 years. You get 2-3 year terms.
Mm-hmm.
So we are constantly looking for new, great people.
Yeah.
Which keeps it fresh. So all these things add up to, I can't imagine working without our board. And I feel lucky every day for it.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to definitely take a few pages out of the book. So I'm going to have to go read it now. So there's so many good things we've covered today. I won't summarize them all, but I loved your Monday all hands meeting with the most important question and then the random question just to drive that, like, seeing, feeling, valuing each other in a team. That was awesome. The five elements of the book really stand out to me. I think all businesses need to be really thinking about the infrastructure and how they run their businesses, particularly now that there's all of these tools popping up that seem like quick fixes. I actually think you got to be wary there. And I love this whole theme of engaging the energies, whether it's of the board members or the partners in the locations to, you know, really come in and come up with ideas and shape direction. So many great hopes there for the future of teamwork for other organizations, and lots for them to emulate from what you're doing with Souls for Souls.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I mean, there's plenty of stuff that needs fixing every day. So I don't want to make people think anything other than we have 85 employees, 85 people showing up every day trying to figure it out. But it's helpful to talk with somebody like you who really knows the landscape, is curious, think, oh, I could learn that. And that actually is something that's successful. And so these kind of conversations both energize me and enlighten me. And I hope that comes through for anybody who's listening.
You bet. Well, I'm certainly energized. So thanks for your time, buddy. And if anyone wants to find out more about Souls for Souls or for your book From Tailspin to Tailwind, how do they reach out?
So we're the same, Instagram, TikTok, all that is SOLES, the number 4, SOULS. So that's the same everywhere.
Yeah.
If you go to buddyteaster.com, you can find out about the book and a podcast too.
Awesome.
I have a feeling you might be showing up on my podcast.
Cool.
That we just started kind of around the book, around purpose. And you can find all that there.
Sweet. All right. Well, thanks so much for your time today, buddy. I really appreciate
it. That's been a pleasure, Dane. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition,
and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time.